All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. It's Destination Health today. Let me take a look at questions. They're light right now, but questions tend to be very heavy for Destination Health. So if you want to get through, there's still a chance. If you press one on your phone right now with a question, a comment, a topic, we will get to you. If you wait, probably not. We are only going to be able to do 2 hours today. I won't be able to do an extra. So we're going to get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. My co-host is Kim Cockerham, and this is the show where we take your calls and answer your questions about everything health. We can talk about fitness, nutrition, food, diet, lifestyle, training, disease, drugs, you name it. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give us a call. We have been lied to for decades when it comes to health, and it's killing us. And Kim and I are here to help you find your destination in true health and real food. We're going to get to your calls in just a little bit. Kim, welcome back.
Hi, glad to be here, Kevin.
You know, there are
having a little bit of, I jumped in on you there. I just keep thinking of you guys and the pictures I'm seeing from your area out there, and so different than what I'm used to and what I'm experiencing now. So
yeah, you know, I grew up in the snow belt like you did, so I know what heavy snows are like. I lived in Florida for a long time, so I didn't deal with it then. But I also lived up at over 9,000 feet in Colorado for a couple years.
Yeah,
I know
great.
What snow is. We've been here in Oregon for 5 years now, and it's so mild in the wintertime. We get maybe one snowstorm a year, and then it melts in a day or two. So I didn't even own a snow shovel, didn't own an ice scraper. And today I'm going to talk about being prepared. In a way, we were prepared for a lot of things, but snow wasn't one of them because we just didn't get much of it. So the weather report had been predicting snow and rain on and off. It was supposed to be right in that temperature where it was going to keep changing back and forth. And in Portland, it did that. We're about 45 minutes east. And here, it really would only turn into rain for maybe an hour at a time, and it was freezing rain. So we would get a layer of snow, a layer of ice, a layer of snow, a layer of ice, and it just kept snowing and snowing. Where we live right now looks like Buffalo. I mean,
wow. Huge
piles and piles of snow, because as we keep plowing, there's just no place left to put it. I think we've got about another hour or two, and then it's supposed to clear up for a couple days. But I have been shoveling like crazy. We have a driveway in the front and a driveway in the back, and they're both big. So I've been doing a tremendous amount of shoveling. And I posted some pictures, and people said, why don't you get a plow, an ATV, a snowblower? And again, we just don't get snow. I had to go buy a shovel because I didn't even have a shovel. And, you know, I thought about, should I just go run and get a snowblower? Because these are big driveways. I mean, it's not just a little bit. And I thought, you know what? This is good exercise. Mm-hmm. It really is a good workout. I've been shoveling neighbors' driveways because they weren't prepared. So I've gotten a really good workout. It's been about 3 days now. I feel like I've been shoveling nonstop. I go from one driveway to the next, and by the time I get done, it's been snowing so hard I have to go back and do it again.
Wow.
But one of the things, you know, I haven't talked a lot about it on this show, but I get off on these, you know, reading binges on different topics. And one of the topics I've been reading a lot about lately, and people are going to think this is weird, but different kind of end of the world as we know it scenarios, the whole idea of, you know, that prepping, but you know, people look at that like they're really weird, and there's lots of different scenarios that could happen that would be absolutely life-changing for all of us. One of them, I did a lot of research and a lot of reading. I read some documentaries and some novels, is the idea of electromagnetic pulses. And they could either happen from a solar flare, actually happened in the 1800s. So that's a completely natural occurrence. It is a huge blast of energy that comes off the sun. And we get little solar flares all the time, but in the late 1800s, they had one that was so big it took down the entire telegraph network. And that was all we really had back then was, you know, telegraph. They said if we were to get one of that magnitude today, it would literally wipe out everything with a computer chip in it, which today is almost everything. My God, your toaster might have a computer chip in it today. So phones, appliances, computers, but cars, vehicles would be turned into a brick. I mean, they'd be worthless. If you wipe out the electronics on one of today's cars, forget it. I mean, you can't even really fix it. We have so many computer chips on cars today. The other thing that's really scary is it would take down the entire electric grid in the country if there were a big enough solar flare. They said if it happened the way it did in 1800, we would lose the entire electric grid. Depending on where the flare hit on the earth at the time, depending on, you know, which, what part of the world gets the most direct hit, you could have entire continents lose power. The really scary thing is they said if in the U.S. they talked about specifically the way our grid is built, that it could be years before they would be able to get it back up. Not days or weeks or months, literally years. They said, we have transformers, the biggest transformers in our system don't even exist anymore. They're not built. And if we could get them built, we don't know if we could transport them to where they needed to be. They're so big. So
That is scary.
And then there, you know, talk of another way that this electromagnetic pulse could happen is it only takes, I guess, three or four small nuclear devices. What happens is they actually detonate these devices up in space. We wouldn't even hear it. We wouldn't see it. We wouldn't even know it happened. But that would create that same electromagnetic pulse that would wipe out electronics, wipe out the grid. In one of the books I read, it's a really interesting novel. If somebody's looking for something to read on this topic, that is a novel with a lot of fact in it. It's called 1 Second After. And the idea is that 1 second after this would happen, it's too late to prepare. I mean, at this point, your vehicle's down. You're not getting to the store. You don't have a vehicle. If you got to the store, they claim the stores would be empty within hours or in the first day. So I've been reading a lot of this and, you know, kind of getting prepared for a more long-term scenario. You know, they talk about being prepared for 72 hours, which would be an excellent idea because I just found out how few people are prepared for just 72 hours. But I think people need to be thinking about being prepared for months as far as food, water, shelter, personal protection. For Christmas this year, I bought everybody what we call a bug out bag or a get home bag. So it's a backpack all loaded with food, a little camp stove, emergency water, you know, a water filter straw that you could literally drink water out of anywhere with this filter and not get sick. And, you know, a little first aid kit and, you know, warm clothes. A way to start, two or three different ways to start fire, two or three different ways to purify water. And you can build a good backpack like this that would easily last one person 5 days with food, everything, for about $100. I mean, it's really not that expensive to do it. And you throw it, the idea is you throw it in your car and it just stays there. If you are ever out on the highway and you have one of these emergencies, whether it's an accident, something that shuts down the road, weather, you could survive in your car. And you could survive in your car for days, or you could grab the backpack and if you're close enough, walk home. and it would have everything in it you need to either stay in the vehicle and survive, or if you're close enough, make it home, and then have longer term supplies at home. So the interesting thing was, I've been reading this. I bought everybody, put together, you know, bug out bags for everybody's vehicle in the family. And so this has been on my mind. Well, here we get this storm. And I was watching the weather saying, you know, they say it's going to rain, but if all of this turns into snow, we're going to be buried. So as soon as it started snowing, I would shovel every time it got to about 3 or 4 inches. So I was able to keep both driveways clear. I put chains, loaded up the vehicles with everything we needed. And yesterday, when the storm was really, it had about 2 days old, Lisa sent out an email to all the neighbors saying, you know, we have a vehicle with chains, four-wheel drive. If anybody needs, you know, if there are emergencies or somebody needs something, let us know. I was shocked at how many neighbors needed groceries. And it was only 2 or 3 days in. And how many of them hadn't been shoveling, and they waited so long that they couldn't shovel. They were so buried and they couldn't get out. They didn't have, you know, many supplies at home, and they couldn't get out. So today's message is really about getting prepared. You know, if you put a little time and effort into it, it's not that difficult. And it can make a huge difference when something like this happens. We're going to talk more about that when we get back, and then we're going to get to your calls and questions. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. We're talking about being prepared. You know, wintertime, we see this a lot with storms. And, you know, we have two interstates here in Oregon. And basically, we have I-5 and I-84. And both of them have been shut down multiple times over the last week. And when they get shut down, you're just stuck. You're sitting there in a vehicle. And it certainly would be nice to be prepared, have some emergency food, some water, some warm clothes, you know, maybe something to entertain yourself, a book, whatever it might be, because you may be there a while. But the other thing is, when I was reading these books about being prepared, they claimed that the average American today has a hard time making it 3 days. And I thought, that's crazy. Come on, people have more than that. But honestly, people don't. They were running. It's not like they're going to starve in 3 days, but 3 days in, they're already missing things that they would normally have, and they don't have a very long food or water supply or a plan to have water. Water and shelter are your most important. You can live a long time without food. You'd rather not, so it's not that hard to, you know, have food as a backup, but you at least have to have a plan for water and shelter, and you should have a plan for some long-term food. And it's really not that hard to do, but I was shocked at how many people were kind of worried that they weren't prepared. They didn't have water. They didn't really think about things like flashlights and just some simple basic things. I've got a backup generator. We have multiple ways to cook and keep warm if we needed to. It really pays to just take some time. There are some great ebooks you can find on the internet about getting prepared that give you checklists and ideas. It's just something to think about. You know, for a couple $100, you could make life a whole lot more comfortable if you just take a little bit of time and do it.
That's really wise. I always think of, especially during, you know, this weather time, our drivers out there and wonder how they are faring out when they get hit, when they can't get, you know, when they're stuck. it has to be huge. And something like this, as well as, you know, all of us at home, I know when we have the hurricane warnings come through, the number one thing I suck up on is the water part. I think I worry about that the most. And I can just imagine, you know, people out on the road, all of our drivers out there. I'd love to hear, you know, even what they do. And if they don't do it, you've really planted a seed to just step back and put this in place, because it's not an emergency until it is an emergency.
And like the book, I thought the title was so powerful. When you read the book and you realize that if something like that were to happen, an EMP, and this isn't that far out, like I said, we documented one that was powerful in the 1800s. That could happen again naturally. We could have some sort of a terrorist strike. They outlined several scenarios that we could lose the entire power grid, and we could lose it for an extended period of time, and that people would start to become desperate within 2 or 3 days of no power. Yeah, and if it's over a widespread area, what we're used to, we are used to a very, very localized disaster. And what happens then is you have the rest of the country that comes to your aid. You know, they ship in water, they, you know, bring in food and supplies, and they bring in shelter. And we've seen that happen. And even then, honestly, how many times has it not gone well? I mean, how many times has FEMA been criticized for not having the supplies in the right place or not being able to distribute them in time? And that's in a very small area that affects 1% of the population, and you have 99% of the population still available to help them. Now imagine a widespread disaster, either, let's say, the entire coast, or in these books, worst case scenario, the entire country is without power. And in some scenarios, without power and without vehicles. Imagine how bad that's going to be for people. If you aren't prepared and you don't have a vehicle, what are you going to do? I mean, I don't live, you know, I have 2 miles to a tiny little grocery store. It would be a tough walk. I mean, I could certainly do it, but it beyond that grocery store, if that one empties out, hell, I've got 10 miles to get to the next one. You know, imagine if you had to walk that just to get some basic supplies. That would be crazy. So, so the book, that the novel was called 1 Second After, and there's actually a follow-up. There's 1 Year After, and then The Final Day, I think, that was just released. Yeah. I read them all. Really, really good novel. Interesting. It talks about a little town in North Carolina that manages to survive this and kind of rebuild itself and everything they went through. And Ted Koppel actually wrote a documentary about this topic. And I don't remember the name of it at all. But if you looked up Ted Koppel and EMP, or you would probably find the title of that one as well. That one was more of a documentary. He talked about how vulnerable our electric grid is. So both of those were two. And then if you like the topic, you could find tons of more books on it. But the idea of just getting prepared. But it brought up one more thing. And when I started shoveling and, you know, thought about, my God, should I get a snowblower or put a plow on my truck? And I thought, you know what? If something like that were to happen, some sort of long-term emergency scenario, one more thing that's going to be critically important that it will be too late to prepare for when it happens is your physical condition.
Tell me more.
That your body is in, because life is going to get difficult. If this happens in the wintertime, you know, what do you do to keep warm? Are you going to be chopping and carrying wood? I have 2 wood-burning fireplaces. And if I had to burn wood all day to stay warm, that's a lot of work. You know, when you have to chop and carry and split, and I like doing it, but I only have to do it a little bit. Imagine when you would have to walk to find water somewhere and carry water back, or, you know, chop wood to stay warm, or, you know, all this shoveling to get out. If you're not in reasonably good physical condition, these emergency situations are going to be a lot more difficult.
Right. That's a really, really good point. I mean, we talk about everything about, you know, getting to be our best healthy self. And, you know, a lot of times we don't do it until it is an emergency, like, you know, your numbers, heart attack, that kind of stuff. And here's just another reason. And it's so true.
You know, I was shocked. I've shoveled a lot of snow in my lifetime when I was a kid, when I lived in Colorado. It's a lot of work. There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been a lot of snow with the rain. It was very heavy, wet snow, so it was really hard to shovel. I was surprised at how well I've handled it for the last 3 days. Like yesterday was nonstop. Mm-hmm. I got up early in the morning, started shoveling, helped neighbors, ran to the grocery store for people, and literally driving around town. I have chains on a four-wheel drive vehicle. I have a tow strap with me. I carry salt and shovels. I literally was pulling people out all day yesterday. Nobody could get out of their driveway, so I was shoveling and chaining and hooking up people and dragging them out of their driveway. Some of my neighbors couldn't shovel their driveway because they were older, so I was doing theirs. I was shocked, and I it has to do with the, you know, the health changes I've made in the last couple of years, being in ketosis. I didn't get hungry all day, and I had tons of energy. I mean, late last night, I was still shoveling and thinking, my God, I haven't eaten all day. And there really is a difference when you are burning fat as your primary source of energy. It is nice to be able to go all day like that and still have energy.
Yeah. That's incredible. That's in a part of, you know, just reiterating, getting ready for our midterms and stuff. It's just, you read everything, the sugar burner, fat burner, and it just reiterates the fact of that's where you want to be. You get the sugar out.
It really is amazing. And the cool thing is, if you need, when you're burning fat, you know, the thing I could notice yesterday is your body still can store some glycogen and you can use that for those short bursts of energy. It was almost like I could feel when the glycogen was gone, but I still had tons of energy from the fat. But then when I did start to eat, it was almost like, you know, replenishing the glycogen, which I've heard some athletes talk about when they're fat adapted. You can still keep those glycogen levels up for even more energy. And it was kind of interesting yesterday to see how that was working, you know, doing a lot of physical activity over almost a 15-hour period and still going strong. You know, so at 53, I felt pretty good about that.
How about soreness and stuff? I mean, compared to what you got, you know your body so well. I mean, have you noticed you get sore from stuff like that, you know, because you're using different muscles and that. How about just recovery?
I'm going to talk about that when I come back, because that was interesting too. A big change to the way that worked over the way it used to work. So we'll talk about that right after this. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim is here with me. We're talking about being prepared. We're also talking about some physical changes, being fat adapted. So, Kim, it's interesting you ask that. You know, I've worked out on and off all my life, and I've been involved in sports all my life, and I've been through that cycle where you haven't been active for a while. Maybe you haven't been to the gym. You haven't been lifting. And you go to get started again, and those first couple days are just brutal. You know you're going to be sore. You know it's going to hurt. Typically for me, if I hadn't worked out for a while and then I did a hard workout, it was usually 48 hours from the time I did the workout till I would feel the worst pain. It took almost 2 days for it to show up, and then it would last for a while. The interesting thing now, and this has been pretty consistent, and I felt this over the last couple of days. The first day I was shoveling a lot, and towards the end of the day, like right before going to bed, the pain set in. I could feel the soreness, and it was the same day. And I thought, oh boy, you know, this hurts. So I went to bed, get up the next morning, pain's gone completely. Feel great, go back at, do it again. Towards the end of a really hard day, I'll actually start feeling the pain in that evening, and then the next morning it's gone. And I got thinking, that's probably a really good, healthy, inflammatory response. When you work out a muscle that hard, you are destroying the muscle. You're tearing it down. Mm-hmm. There's going to be pain. There's going to be inflammation. But I think that that immediate inflammation and then quick turnaround and recovery is actually a really good sign.
Yeah, we have to have it. We have to have it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was interesting. So the pain was pretty intense, but it was short duration and then cleared up quickly. And then I was right back to, you know, being able to work again.
And ready for the next snowfall.
Ready for the next snowfall. That's right. speaking of ready, you ready to take some calls?
Yeah, let's
All
do
right.
it.
Let's do that. Let's start off in Ohio. Willie, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. Question about my MNR lipid lipo profile that I sent you. My triglycerides seem to have gone up another 300 points.
Which is kind of crazy. So are you still losing weight?
Yes.
Okay. One of the things I've read that is when somebody goes on a keto or a high-fat, low-carb diet, and they're still losing weight, they're still in that stage of losing weight, that most people agree it's not worth having your cholesterol checked until the weight is gone. There's a theory that as you're losing weight, those triglycerides are fat, that the triglycerides are being released into your bloodstream, and they are going to cause that big spike in triglycerides, sometimes HDL, sometimes LDL, but triglycerides seem to be even more sensitive to this. So most doctors recommend waiting until you've lost all the weight and then wait about another 30 days and then run the cholesterol numbers. There's also a condition called familial hypercholesterolemia. And if you have that, then you get crazy high cholesterol numbers. And there's not a lot
My triglycerides have gone up to the 2800s without medication of any sort. I was diagnosed when I was 16. I've been dealing with for 30 years now, and the diabetes type 2.
So, and they go hand in hand, the diabetes. Right. Makes the cholesterol worse. That's why a high fat, low carb diet, even for somebody with this condition, is still better. And it will make triglycerides go up, especially while you're losing weight. Kim, did you get that link I sent you?
Yeah, and I sent it up to William just before the show.
Okay, good.
He might not have even gotten it yet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Will, we sent you a link. It's from Diet Doctor, and I grouped together all of the articles in there about high cholesterol on a low-fat diet. They had some really good articles in there written by doctors. So I thought it would help you to go through and read those about when it happens, why it happens, and, you know, are there any dangers to it at all? And I think when you read those, you're going to understand this a lot more. But this does happen occasionally.
Right.
And there's still a tremendous amount of research that says you're still better off on the high-fat diet.
Oh, I see benefits even with those high numbers like that, that I've been able to drop 5 different medications that I was previously on just last year.
Excellent.
One of which was one of those weekly injection hormone blocks, and I was really worried about taking that in the first place.
Right.
And that was for the diabetes. So
yeah, and
yeah,
and,
I see a lot of benefits, you know, still.
Yeah, and I'm glad you got off those. You know, trying to screw around with our hormones with medication and blocking certain hormones, just a bad idea, really bad idea. Our body produces those hormones for a reason. So I'm glad that you got off the medications. I would certainly, you know, I wouldn't ignore this, but if you're still losing weight, I would hold off on checking the cholesterol numbers. When you get down to the weight you want to be at, I would give it another 30 days and then go recheck them. But in the meantime, read some of these articles, and I think you're going to have a better understanding of what's going on.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call, and congratulations. Sounds like good results. Let's go to Minnesota. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Kim.
Hi there.
Hey, I had a physical recently done, and I've never had the new formulas for cholesterol ever checked. I sent you some information. I was just wondering if you could go through them with me.
I did go through them, and I am pretty darn impressed. You know, when we talk about cholesterol, I don't get too worried about high numbers and what the doctors say, because most of what they say, they've been looking at the wrong numbers in the wrong way. So I took your cholesterol numbers and I ran them through some of the new calculations as far as ratios. You were virtually perfect.
Awesome.
I mean, you were every ratio I calculated, like triglycerides to HDL, HDL to total cholesterol, triglycerides to total cholesterol, everything I could think of, every ratio that seems to matter, you fell into the ideal range, not even just the good range. You were in the ideal range on every ratio.
The cholesterol HDL ratio screen, I called the nurses yesterday and asked them to go through the numbers with me. She had no idea what that was.
I know.
3.7.
Right. Yeah.
And then also on the LDL, I'm on the top level of that, and she told me to cut back on my saturated fats.
Yeah, of course she did, because that's the same old wrong advice we've been getting for decades.
Was I right with telling her, no, I need good saturated fat and cut my carbs? That's the answer?
Absolutely. That is the right answer. Yeah. Yep. You know, the other thing that I know, that actually, like I say, I think your cholesterol is perfect. I think your A1C is up at the high end of the normal range. Mm-hmm. Still normal.
And
but
I am getting readings high. I'm getting over 100 this morning. I checked and I'm over 100. I did get some 80s. You know, we've been with the ketonics now. We've been testing for over a week now, and I thought we were getting places because I was in the 80s for a while. But I've had readings in the upper 90s to 125, and I guess maybe something I need to watch a little bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too concerned about it. You're experiencing, I went through this as well. It's called the dawn effect. When you check fasting in the morning and you get one of those days where all of a sudden it's at 120 and you can't figure out why. The good news is that as long as you are under 140, and you know, now that you're on a very high fat, low carb diet, you probably very seldom, if ever, go above 140, there's no damage. So even if you stayed at what they consider an elevated fasting level, see, what they're looking at is most people on a standard American diet, if they start showing up at 120, 130 fasting, then they are probably spiking to over 200 when they eat. But when somebody's on a good keto diet, they may have that same 120 fasting, but they eat and it actually goes down. It goes the other way when they eat. So they're never in the danger zone. So doctors have a hard time with this. They'll look at your fasting blood sugar and say you're diabetic or pre-diabetic when you're not. Because they don't know how to read these numbers when somebody's on a high-fat, low-carb diet. The other thing is, I'll tell you, if you would like to see those morning numbers down, I'm working on a tonic right now that has dropped my fasting blood numbers in the morning by, I'm up to 15 points lower now, consistently. We're going to be releasing that within the next week. I'm still trying to tweak, trying to make it taste a little better. It's working really well, but I don't think most people would like the taste yet. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin. This is Destination Health. Kim's here with me. I talked about this last week, and I'm still playing around with it. There's a drink I've been trying to come up with at night, and it's got another one of the mushroom blends. Like, we have the mushroom coffee in the morning that's good at lowering blood sugar. This is another blend of a really special. It's called a reishi mushroom. And this one doesn't have any coffee because it's actually meant to relax you at night and help put you to sleep, but it still has this mushroom extract in it. And apple cider vinegar, raw apple cider vinegar, is actually very powerful at lowering blood sugar. The mechanism is it makes your cells more insulin sensitive, so your cells will take up the blood glucose faster and move it out of your bloodstream. So I've been playing around with this drink at night. People who like acidic foods would probably like this. I've tested it with some people. People that like really acidic pickles and lime juice and things like that actually like this drink. People who don't like acidic stuff can't even sip it. So I haven't really, you know, I don't want to overly sweeten it, because the whole idea here is to lower blood sugar. So I'm up to about a teaspoon of honey, which isn't a big deal. And I like the taste, but I'm still playing around with it. But in just a couple weeks, my fasting blood glucose has dropped by 15 points consistently.
Wow. And you usually don't have problems with it anyways to begin with. So that's a cool test you did.
Yeah, you know, I had some of those spikes in the morning. I had talked about the dawn effect, and that, you know, started to kind of mellow out. But I'm seeing fasting blood sugar numbers now in the mid to high 70 range.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and there are other benefits to the apple cider vinegar digestion. And so I'm going to play around with this recipe for a while, see if I can get it a little more palatable for people, and then we will release it probably like a protocol again.
Nice.
Yeah. So let's get back to some calls. Let's go to Illinois. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. One of the foods that I loved to eat as a kid were raisins. I wonder how that, because it is a fruit, dried out. I didn't know what the sugar content and if those were good, as long as I could find them where they're not sweetened even more.
Absolutely, you don't want anything that is additionally sweetened. Raisins are crazy
right.
in sugar already. Mm-hmm. All dried fruit is. And it's so high in sugar because it's concentrated.
Okay.
You lose the water, but you don't lose any of the sugar. So you take let's say if you were going to eat grapes, and if you took that bunch of grapes and you ate a handful, well, that would have a certain amount of sugar. But if you take those and you dry them or dehydrate them to get a raisin, you're probably going to eat three or four times more of them because they're so small and they're not loaded with the water or the juice. So you would feel like you were eating the same quantity, a handful, but you'd be getting four times more sugar than if you ate the grapes. So it's not that they're necessarily bad. It is still a natural food. If there's nothing added to it, it still has the fiber, it has the minerals, but it is crazy high in sugar. So you just want to watch the quantity. Like, I will throw some dried fruit once in a while into a salad, but I'll just be careful about how much. A tablespoon or two of raisins or dried mangoes or dried tart cherries or things like that. It's really good. There's nutrition there. Just watch your overall carb count for the day. And the other thing is, no matter what my carb count for the day is, I try never to consume more than 15 grams of net carbs at a sitting. So, right. You know, even if you're going to eat, say, 100 grams of carbs a day, the more you spread those carbs out, the better off you're going to be, because you wouldn't get any one big blood sugar spike at a time.
Yeah, I'm looking at this with the, you know, John, the total carbs on these are like 34 grams for a small box of it. So compared to that, I love your, like, it's true, the grapes, which are, you know, higher sugar, would still be a better choice than the dried. And we've had people ask about dried fruit for snacks and that, and they are one of the top sugar snack foods that people do and can eat way too many with before they even know it.
Yeah, I don't really recommend them for snacking. I would not keep a bag around and snack on them. Like I said, if you want to throw a tablespoon or two into a salad or use it like that, but to snack on them, you could hit 100 grams of carbs without even knowing it.
Right. My other question is, I buy some pre-made meat rubs and some pre-made steak seasonings. Have you heard anything about those having lots of sugar, or what would you suggest for seasoning your meat and your food?
Well, I've actually found a couple lines of seasonings now that are paleo, primal, really clean. Seasonings and herbs and spices can have real nutritional value. Cinnamon has got a ton of benefits. Turmeric is like a superfood. Cilantro is very healthy. So I use a ton of seasonings and herbs and spices, but it's the quality of them. The stuff you buy in the regular grocery store has fillers, has preservatives, has MSG, has sugar, has just all kinds of nasty stuff. So if you seek out organic, clean seasonings and rubs, then you're fine. But I wouldn't, you know, use the stuff you find in the grocery store all that often, because they've got a lot of junk in them. So that was one of the things in my pantry over time. I just kept throwing away the old stuff that I used to use and replacing it with new, clean seasonings and spices that no MSG, no gluten, no fillers, no preservatives. Watch the term natural flavoring. That sounds good, natural flavoring. And they use that term a lot, and they don't tell you what natural flavoring. My favorite example of this, though, raspberry and vanilla. When you eat something that might be flavored like raspberry ice cream, the natural flavoring for raspberry and vanilla actually comes from a beaver's anal glands. How does that sound for natural flavoring? Isn't that disgusting?
Pass.
Yeah. So watch the term natural. It comes from an animal. It's obviously natural, but they get some of these flavorings some from really odd places. So I think I'd rather just stick with the spice itself and not all the junk. Let's go to Maryland. Regina, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Kim.
Hi there.
I have a friend that, they're trying to diagnose him with MS. Is there any benefit to a ketogenic diet with that?
There is. What I would recommend rather than just a straight keto would be one of the elimination diets. And actually, I would recommend the AIP. You can look up AIP diet, AIP protocol, and you'll find a ton of information online. AIP stands for autoimmune protocol. And MS is an autoimmune condition, so the diet is specifically designed to help. My son Michael just reminded me, look up the Walls protocol. WAHLS. WAHLS, Walls Protocol. It's written by a doctor, Terry Walls, and she has MS herself, the doctor. And she developed this protocol specifically for MS patients, and it works extremely well. I'm actually going to be speaking with her in March. Her and I are doing a panel together at the NTA conference in March. So I'm going to get a chance to meet her and actually speak on a panel together.
Okay. That I'll pass that information on to him. Now, another question. I have the Beta Plus. I do not have my gallbladder anymore. And I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but on the mornings that I take it, I throw up within 10 minutes. Is there anything that is related to that?
There probably is. Anytime we see an immediate reaction like that, we need to take a step back and try something else. So what I'm going to recommend is that you do a 30-day gut healing protocol first. So IPS, okay. The collagen gelatin, bone broth. You could look at the GAPS diet, G-A-P-S. And if you wanted to go that far, maybe do 30 days of the GAPS diet. And then when we come back, we could test the Beta Plus again. Because if you don't have the gallbladder, you've got to get bile salts. That's not an option.
Right.
There are a couple other supplements we could try along with it. But I think we need to do some gut healing first. With that, I've got to get out of here. We'll do it again next time. Thanks for joining us. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Oh, hold on. All right. We are going to do a second hour here, so let's get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. My co-host is Kim Cockerham, and this is the show where we take your calls and answer your questions about everything health. We could talk about food, nutrition, fitness, diet, lifestyle, exercise, training, injuries, drugs, disease, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask the question. Kim, welcome back.
Hi, glad to be here, Kevin.
So last show, we talked a lot about preparation and not just so much for health, but just in life in general and being prepared for emergencies. You know, there, when you start to look at the scenarios that could happen, and we just had a small one, you know, a major snowstorm here in a part of the country that isn't used to this. This part of Oregon does not use salt at all. So the more snow we got, the more the snow kept building up, the worse the roads get. You know, if this keeps up, pretty soon deliveries aren't making it. Stores will start to run out of things. And it's surprising how fast that happens. You know, stores only have a couple days worth of stuff on their shelves. They get deliveries constantly. So anything that would disrupt power or deliveries or anything like that can really have a big impact on people's life. So there's a lot of good resources. You find things online as far as, you know, getting ready. And I'm not talking about becoming some crazy extreme prepper that's, you know, ready to live for 5 years in a bunker. But, you know, I think you should have enough supplies on hand that if you had to survive for a month with no outside help, you would be able to make it 30 days. And in some scenarios, that wouldn't be enough. But they said one of the biggest problems, and I saw this, we were very well prepared. We stayed on top of keeping the driveways cleared. I have a four-wheel drive vehicle with chains on it. We have emergency food, emergency water, emergency heat, a backup generator. I mean, I could easily stay here in the house a month. Wouldn't bother me a bit with no outside resources whatsoever. What scared me, and I read about this a lot in the books, and I thought they were crazy when they said most Americans have trouble after 3 days of something like this. What was kind of scary was because we were so prepared, each morning I would get up, shovel what snowed overnight, and I would go out and drive around. And I've got chains on a four-wheel drive vehicle. I carry a tow strap with me, jumper cables, a jump start module, a shovel, salt, tools, food, everything. And I would drive around and I would find people stuck in their driveway. They weren't shoveling. They couldn't get out. The reason they were trying to get out was to get to the store because they were running out of stuff already. And the real challenge is if you are the one prepared, how much are you willing to share? I want to help people. I mean, that's what I do. But at some point, if you have 10 people around you who aren't prepared, and you're the only one who is, you can only share so much. You put everybody at risk then.
Yeah, that absolutely comes to mind too.
You know, at some point, as much as I would hate to do it, I would have to stop sharing. And it would feel bad because I would have all these supplies. But if you just share them with a couple people, pretty soon everybody starves. So what's the point? Yeah. The point is that everybody needs to prepare for this, that you can't depend on hoping somebody else prepared. Everybody needs to be prepared at the bare minimum to make it a week. You know, look around your house. And one of the good things I read was even to practice this once. Just take a couple days, like a weekend when you don't have to work, and just pretend you can't go to the store. Pretend you're out of power. Pretend there's no water. You know, you turn on the faucet and there's nothing there. That could happen. And see, what kind of things would you be missing? Like, we sent out an email to the neighbors and said, hey, look, you know, we've got a vehicle. It's got chains. We're out. If you're stuck and you need something, let us know. And people did. I made a grocery run for people. And they were having me get things like coffee and dog food. In 2 days, they didn't have coffee and they didn't have dog food. And just look around and what kind of things would you need if something like that happened? And just get prepared.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what, I think most people, and I know I'm thinking about it too, and I even sent a note to my husband, you know, because he travels a lot. So I'm right. Like, you know, I want to step back and look at this as well. And, you know, you'll have a certain sense of peace just by doing that, you know, that's completely the other end of the spectrum of when something happens and then you're in an emergency situation.
Yeah, it was funny. The people that I would, like I said, I was driving around with the tow strap. I've pulled out more cars in the last couple of days. And the interesting thing was, Lisa and I, because we're prepared, we've just been enjoying the hell out of this. It is absolutely gorgeous. It's stunning outside. It's beautiful. And we've been walking around taking pictures, and Diesel loves it out in the snow. So we've been playing with him. We've just been kind of having fun with it. I've been working hard, but the people who aren't prepared are miserable. That they're like, I'm like, as I'm pulling their car out of the ditch, I'm like, look around, isn't this gorgeous? And they're like, no, hell no. I can't get to work. We're out of water. Get prepared. You know, it makes that, then you can just sit back and relax and enjoy it, you know, and not get all stressed about it.
Mm-hmm. Good, good, good lesson.
All right. Let's get to some calls. Let's start off in Michigan. Gary, welcome to the program. Uh-oh. We just lost.
Oh, no.
I know.
He's been having a really hard time getting into the show because he keeps dropping. So, Gary, please try to call back again. We'll find you.
I don't know what that happens that keeps happening. Let's go to Georgia. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. I have a question for you today about just the digestion.
Okay.
And the fact that I have had really poor digestion, I would say, for several years. And when I started on keto last year, it got a lot better. And I thought it was all good and everything, but it started to come back again now.
Okay. So explain what's happening.
Well, honestly, I've never been to the doctor and been diagnosed or anything, but I always thought I had what they call the irritable bowel syndrome. I mean, it can come on at a moment's notice, and I mean, it's not pretty.
Okay. Have you done the FIT
test? And it's not quite that bad right now. I have not done the FIT test, no.
You should consider it, because the FIT, what we're looking at primarily is once you've got gut damage, so leaky gut, those kind of things, if that's present, we're probably going to get a long list of foods that you're reacting to. And you're reacting to them, not because you're allergic to them, but because you've got the gut damage and those proteins are getting into the bloodstream where they don't belong and they shouldn't be there. And that's when we get those reactions. So I would start there. Then I would also really consider doing something like the GAPS diet or a Whole30. There's a couple different protocols out there that are basically elimination diets. They're going to get rid of everything. I think I like GAPS better. They're going to do more bone broth, more gut healing nutrients. I think we need to do a really good round of gut healing with you. Are you drinking the Bulletproof coffee?
You know, I don't drink coffee at all. And I tried Bulletproof. I tried a Bulletproof cocoa with that Crêblée or... What was that one that you recommended a few months back?
The
hot chocolate type of thing. I tried that, and I liked it, but I'd rather eat something in the morning for breakfast, I guess.
Okay, and that's fine.
So I really just eat bacon.
Yeah, and that's fine. The thing about, there's nothing magical about Bulletproof coffee. The reason I like it and it works for me is because it's something that people are very consistent with. People who drink coffee drink coffee every morning. And it's a way that I've been playing around with different recipes of Bulletproof coffee to get in different nutrients. Like I'm working on one now with fiber instead of the collagen gelatin. And it's just an idea of a food that we know you're going to consume every day. So if we put certain things in, you're going to get those things every day, and it's consistent. But if you're not drinking coffee, I wouldn't start. But I would look at bone broth. I would look at the IPS. I would look at some of the gut healing protocols like the GAPS diet. And I think, and I would recommend the FIT test. Let's find out if you do have a long list, and you may find that things like eggs, you know, or dairy you're reacting to, and that's going to cause some of these digestive issues. So let's start with that. And the good news is the gut healing is actually pretty consistent. It's easy to fix. It works. You just have to do it. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Kim, I think we've got Gary in Michigan back. Gary, you with us?
Yes, I am.
All right.
I have a question on, I had talked to you last week sometime about starting to just put vegetables in my Nutra blender or whatever you want to call that thing.
Yeah.
And I got it down to where I'm only putting two raspberries in there, or black raspberries. I put 6 blueberries in there. I put, like, I'm guessing, like 20 stems with the leaves of cilantro, with about the same amount of parsley and then some spinach and like a cucumber, about an inch and a half long chunk of cucumber. And what else was there? Oh, one stick of celery and one carrot. And my question is what can I put in there to, because it seems like since I started the ketogenic diet, I don't know if it's coincidence or it's my age, but it seems like I need my reading glasses for everything now. You know, I'm 52, going to be 53 here. And just trying to find out what is there anything I can change for better nutrients for my eyes or something like that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we could look at nutrients that are good for your eyes, lutein and some of those other things, and maybe either supplement with those or maybe, you know, add more of those foods to the diet. But, you know, the one thing we have to be careful of on a keto diet talks nothing about nutrition at all. When we talk about you can be very ketogenic and be eating junk. I mean, I even showed... Yep. Where you can eat a Big Mac every day and be ketogenic. It's about 44 grams of carbs.
Yep.
To eat a Big
Mac. But I'm a combination of the I do all organic and I do it's cross between paleo and the keto.
Yeah.
I lost the 20 pounds. I wanted to lose 25. I lost 20 pounds and stayed there. And as long as I don't have to hold my breath to bend over to tie my shoe, I am so happy.
Good, good. Then I think you're on the right track, because that's what I was going to recommend. I was going to recommend, you know, certainly stay high fat, low carb, but start looking at nutrient density, quality of food, those kind of things, because that's going to be more important to things like eyesight. You may even want a supplement with that. There are some targeted supplements that will kind of load up on the nutrients that are good for eyes, but it's more likely that this is age related. You know, I started needing reading glasses when I was 40. I'm 53 now and I wear glasses full time.
But I only feel 17 right now. Come on now.
Well, see, that's the interesting thing. Because I say that all the time, that I feel better now than I did when I was 20, but the eyes aren't cooperating as much.
Oh, that's a bummer. And my follicle challenge head is still not helping out yet either.
Yeah, exactly. I know the feeling. But I was able to shoot.
But is there any vegetables? I want to try to keep it without, because I take enough supplements and stuff. I was wondering, is there anything that is more prone to be better for nutrition for my eyes?
Are you eating liver?
Not yet. I did get a quarter beef organic, you know, beef, which I know they do have a tiny bit of corn at towards the end of whatever, but otherwise that was as close as I could find to organic and stuff, and I did get all the liver from the full beef because nobody else wanted it.
Yeah, I know. Liver is an outstanding source of nutrients for the eyes, primarily retinol, the true form of vitamin A. There is not a food on the planet that has more retinol than beef liver. And we've always said you should eat carrots for your eyes. And they said that because vitamin A is so good for your eyes, but carrots don't have vitamin A. They have beta carotene, and our body isn't very good at converting it to retinol and vitamin A. But liver has it in the form that's good for us. So I was going to say, if you can eat liver itself, then that'd be excellent. If not, Epic, the company Epic, makes little snack bites kind of thing, like a soft beef jerky kind of thing. And they make one that has liver in it. You can find it at Thrive Market. So that's a great snack to keep in the truck. It's got good long shelf life. Tastes excellent. I really like the taste of it. I think people that don't even like liver would like this. And that would be another way to get more nutrition in for the eyes as well.
Okay. And so I figured I was going to start because I don't like liver, I thought I could try again and see if, you know, maybe, but I couldn't. And so what I'm going to do is take about 4 to 5 pounds of just regular burger and grind about 1 pound of liver in it so I don't notice it so much. At least I'm getting some extra nutrition out of it and do my beef jerky out of it.
Yeah, my son just sent me over a note because he happened to just read a book that really covered eye health a lot. And I guess one of the things that we're facing is spend so much time looking at flat, one-dimensional stuff like phones and computers and screens. Even when you're driving, you're looking at kind of a one-dimensional almost. You're just looking right at the road all day long. And
yep,
he says
yep.
There's a lot of evidence that if we get away from that, if we go outside, and when you're driving, look off at different distances. Like look right down in front of the truck, look way out ahead of the truck, look off to the side. That it's almost like exercising the eyes and it keeps the lenses more flexible. So that may be something to think about as well. Change the way you look at things throughout the day.
Okay. Hey, do you have the name of that book?
I don't. Maybe he's listening. Maybe he will send that over, and if he does, I will mention it. Let me see. I got to go back up the top because we went back down to the bottom to find him. We're going to head off to Florida. Pete, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing? I've been fasting. I think this is my 23rd day. And what I wanted to do, what I'm calling to ask is, I wanted to take those hydrochloric acid pills once I start eating again. Do you think that would be good after fasting, or would am I better off just waiting a while before I start to do that?
No, I would start it as soon as you eat. The reason why is, by the way, congratulations, a 23-day fast. That's pretty awesome.
Hey, and you know what's weird? Every day it feels better than the previous day, and I got more energy than I had the previous day. You know, I'm 66. I think 2 days ago when I got unloaded at Florida, I walked 24,000 steps of 1.5 miles, and then the following day I did 0.7, and I figured I'd be pooped by the time I got done. But like I said, every day it seems like I got more energy. You know, when I was listening to your monologue, I was thinking to myself, as long as I got my butter and my bulletproof coffee, I could go forever.
That's right. Kim, isn't that impressive?
That's really awesome, and I bet a lot of people are also wondering. Pete, tell us what a day looks like to you fasting. So it sounds like you do the bulletproof coffee. But tell us what your days look like.
Well, you know what you call it? At the beginning, you know, I wasn't doing all that. Well, I take that back. I was walking at the mall because I was at the house and stuff. What I noticed, I didn't have the endurance that I had like a year ago. But then, what do you call it? I've been sort of slacking off during the year. And it seems like, what do you call it? Once, that would have been probably about the 8th or 9th day. It seems like that's when it really kicked in. And all of a sudden, I started noticing more energy. I personally think that the longer you're on it, the more efficient your body is getting with the fat you have. Or maybe it's scared that you're going to be starving. So what do you call it? It's preserving it and using it wisely, you know. But like I said, now I even started my push-ups and stuff, you know, like when I get up in the morning. And you're right, Kevin, what do you call it? Like I noticed that by the end of the night, all of a sudden my shoulders and stuff started hurting because I haven't done them for quite a while. But the next day I was ready to go again. So what do you call it? Kind of amazing.
Yeah, pretty amazing. And a 23-day fast. Kim, we were just talking about being prepared for an emergency. This is a pretty good skill to develop. You know, in an emergency situation, to be able to go that long with minimal amounts of food would be a huge advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. Your body be ready for it too. So that's a great, great point.
Congratulations, Pete. Great stuff. What a great example. And there is more and more research, Kim. I know you talked with Jimmy Moore about fasting, and we've read a lot about Jason Fung. Just some amazing benefits to the human body when you fast. So that's fantastic. We'll talk more about that when we come back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim is here with me. So, Kim, why don't you talk a little bit about when you talked with Jimmy Moore about he's big on fasting, and he's worked with Dr. Jason Fung, which he does a ton on fasting. I do, you know, kind of that intermittent 8-6 fasting just about every day, meaning almost every 24-hour period, I go 18 hours without eating. So if I eat my last meal, say, at 6 o'clock in the evening, and then I don't eat again till noon the next day, and I try to keep all of my meals between noon and 6 p.m., that means every day I'm going 18 hours without eating. So it's a way to fast without ever going a whole day without eating. But then there are also benefits to doing these extended fasts. 23 days, certainly a long one.
Yeah, that is. And it was fascinating talking with Jimmy. And I'll tell you, you know, you brought the dietdoctor.com site to our attention, and we share that with everybody. And so that's a really good resource too. Dr. Jason Fung has a lot of videos out there that are wonderful. And I guess it was just fasting used to scare me for some reason. I mean, just not being open-minded. You know, you'd see people doing it, and I guess just timing-wise, I was, you know, you might not have been ready to hear about it, and some people might not be ready to hear about it now. It makes them kind of grimace. But keep an open mind, because there will be a time, even down the road, if you're not ready for it now, that you might want to visit it again, you know, on this health journey. And so that was the biggest thing I learned. Jimmy kind of brought it to being like, you know, this makes sense, and I want to try it. And I think it was Wednesday, one of the shows that we did that he was on, and I got up the next day and I thought, you know what, I'm kind of ready to try this. So I did do a little over 40-hour fast then from there. And I think what Pete, it sounded like Pete did, I was hoping to hear maybe a little bit more of a day on what he drank, or, you know, whether it was bone broth. I did the Bulletproof coffee and the bone broth and water for my fast. That was enough to get me to try it and to see what benefits I had from it. And I feel great. I mean, so I encourage people to start somewhere and try it, you know, and take it from there. There's, who is it? Hugh Jackman. It's interesting. Intermittent fasting diet. He does all the time. It's actually called the Wolverine diet. And he fasts from, 6 p.m. at night until 10 a.m. in the morning. And then he eats in that 8-hour time frame. So it gives your body a break. And it's just, you know, I encourage anybody, you know, if you're not sure about it, read up on it some more. Read Jimmy's book. Go watch some of the videos by Dr. Jason Fung, and just give it a shot. Try it.
You know, I have avoided the long-term fast. I haven't tried one yet. Michael just brought up another good point. If somebody's going to do a long-term fast, 20 days, certainly long-term, you would probably want to do some supplementation, multivitamin, you know, maybe a combination of a couple different groups of vitamins, because that is a long time to go without nutrition. And the human body is pretty amazing. And there are lots of things that are happening that are good during that time, but we also don't want to run into deficiencies. And the longer you go, the more likely it is that you could become deficient in something. So, and I think almost all the books cover those kind of things. like, mm-hmm. depending on how long the fast is, they talk about, well, supplement with this, or, you know, if you're going to do it long term. But doing some bulletproof coffee and some bone broth, you know, you're getting some very targeted nutrients in those things. But there are some other things we could come up deficient on. So if you're going to do a long-term fast, I would recommend reading about good, healthy fasting so that you know some of these things. I think part of the reason I've avoided the long-term, I've talked about this before. I wrestled most of my life, starting at a very young age. And wrestling, you know, was about weight loss and always trying to make one more weight class lower. And back then, because I didn't know, I did the weight loss thing all wrong. I mean, I would eat junk all week mm-hmm. long. And then the last mm-hmm. 2 or 3 days, I would starve and dehydrate myself and not eat for 3 days and not drink. And it was just pure misery every time. And I have those memories. So for me to even think about going 2 or 3 days without eating, it kind of makes me a little crazy. I'm a little gun shy. The 18-hour fast for me is a breeze. I do it virtually every day. But I do think about maybe I should do a 72-hour or 48-hour. So one of these days I will attempt it. I don't think I'm ready yet.
And you know what? You got to decide what your goals are too. And what I found with it as well is, like, you get into it so far and you almost get, I wasn't obsessed with it, but I was kind of like, oh, you know, I don't want to break this. So I kind of lost sight of what my goal was with it, you know? So, you know, if it's just like a reset that you just need to do it just to kind of, you know, cleanse your body, cleanse your mind, I would encourage somebody to try it. And I'm the same way. I don't know. I don't have a desire to necessarily do that again. I'm not saying I would or wouldn't, but I wouldn't go into it blindly. I don't know, you know, use that time completely. You know, if you're going to fast for a period of time, then, you know, take it a step further and have that, you know, cleanse your mind, cleanse your body and your soul and just enjoy it. Enjoy the process.
Yeah. Great stuff. Let's go to Missouri. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin and Kim. Thanks for taking my call. You know what? I got my girlfriend doing a keto diet. She loves it, but she talked to a nutritionist today and she called me all panicking saying, Greg, I eat 20 net carbs a day. That's what she's doing. And the lady was telling her that it's all right, but if she stays in ketosis too long, she could turn into something that's called ketoacidosis and it can kill her.
Oh my God.
So now
When I saw up here, it, you know, I saw something about staying in ketosis for too long, and I thought she might say that you could run into some nutritional deficiencies. I could have agreed with her on that, that some people, it doesn't make sense to stay too low carb for too long. Everybody's different. Some people can thrive on super low carb for a very long time and maybe forever. Other people adding more carbs back in, like, you know, sweet potatoes and some fruit and things like that, is a good idea to bring more nutrition in, but still staying fairly low carb, maybe moving from 20 grams to 60 even. Those kind of things I agree with. And one of the things we watch for to know if somebody is being harmed by being too low carb too long, or we watch the adrenals. If we start to see some adrenal fatigue, and we can even test for this, then we would start to add some carbs back in, but we don't have to get crazy about it. But what she said just eliminates her advice completely. She couldn't be more wrong. It is impossible for somebody with insulin to become ketoacidosis, to become in a state of ketoacidosis. It can't happen. If there is insulin present, you cannot go into that state. Ketoacidosis happens to type 1 diabetics because they don't produce any insulin at all, or it's possible in type 2 diabetics, but it's almost always caused by their medication. Farxiga is one of the popular diabetic medications, and it is notorious for causing ketoacidosis. And ketoacidosis can kill you, by the way. It's nothing to mess around with. But it never happens in a healthy person on a low-carb diet. Well, let's take a great example. We just had somebody who's been fasting for 23 days. How much more low-carb could you get? Yeah. How much more low-carb could you get? And there is zero danger of going into ketoacidosis at zero carbs. You could literally eat zero carbs every day. You're not going to go into that state of ketoacidosis. It happens to type 1 diabetics or very insulin-dependent type 2 diabetics, and it's usually caused by their medication, actually.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, Kevin. She'll be relieved because she's never felt better. She's
good.
Like, hey, how can something that you feel so good with be hurtful to you? Because she tells people about it, and they all are like, no, that's not a good diet. So
tell her to tell her nutritionist to go back to school.
I will. Thanks, you guys. Have a good day. Love the show. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. All right, there's the music. We've got to get to a break. We're going to come back and get to more of your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. We're off to Georgia. Richard, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call, Kevin. Got three questions.
Okay.
The first one is, what would you suggest and how to go about it starting out on the ketogenic diet if you're a truck driver out on the road 5 days, home usually Friday afternoon, leave out Sunday afternoon, back out on the road?
Couple things. I have a couple steps I'd like to kind of walk through because it makes getting into ketosis easier to understand. The first thing I tell people is stop drinking any sugar of any kind. Stop drinking your calories. And the only exception to that is the calories you would drink in bulletproof coffee if you decide to do bulletproof coffee, because they're all fat. So that's not a bad thing. But we don't want to drink any sodas, any teas with sugar, coffee with sugar, any of those things. We just don't want to consume sugar as a liquid. That's step number one. Okay. So water, coffee, tea, that kind of stuff. Then eliminate all grains. That means all breads, pastas, rice, corn, wheat, soy, all of those things. Just eliminate those completely. And when you do that, between eliminating drinking the sugars and eliminating all grains, you're pretty darn close to ketogenic already. And as long as you're not adding any extra sugars in or eating too much fruit, that may be enough to get you to ketosis. You may actually have to start counting carbs and net carbs and those kind of things. And you can look up ranges online, but for the most part, that'll get you darn close. So, and you still want to avoid things like potatoes, anything overly starchy. primarily what you're going to eat are good fats, protein, and all the vegetables you want, as long as the vegetable grows above ground. Vegetables that grow below ground, you've got to limit those somewhat and be a little more careful. Onions, carrots, sweet potatoes, things like that. You really limit those. But things that grow above ground, greens, peppers, you know, those kind of vegetables, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, asparagus, all that. Eat as much of that as you want. Good fats, grass-fed butter, virgin coconut oil, you know, grass-fed beef tallow and pork lard. Those kind of things are all great fats, and you can eat as much of those as you want. Eggs, as long as you're not sensitive to eggs, you can eat those. You know, the nice thing, if you're only gone 4 or 5 days, is it's pretty easy to do your food preparation at home on the weekends and carry enough with you to take you through all 4 or 5 days, so you really don't have to eat out.
That was going to be my next question, Kevin. So I've been stopping at Wendy's just real quick looking at the list. I'm stuck in traffic right now so I can write. So a baked potato and a chili at Wendy's is not a good combination then, is it, sir?
Horrible. Horrible, because the baked potato is loaded with carbs and they spike your blood sugar quickly. And even the chili, the beans are high in carbs. So, like, I'm to the point where I will eat beans now, but I really prefer to prepare my own from dry for a lot of reasons and soak them and all those things. But beans are something you've got to be careful of. They do have nutrition, but they're pretty starchy. So in the beginning, I would avoid beans. Here's the way I eat at Wendy's. I look at whatever burger that Wendy's has that I really like. Maybe it's a bacon Swiss, you know, jalapeno burger, whatever it is. Yeah. And then I look at their salads, and they have a salad that I really like, whatever it happens to be. Maybe it's their cranberry walnut salad or whatever it might be. And I will, at Wendy's, I just make it easy. I don't try to confuse them with the order. I order the burger and the salad. That's what I order. When I get ready to eat it, I just take the bun off the burger. I take everything else, the bacon, the Swiss, the tomato, lettuce, whatever they put on it, and I just take that whole thing and pile it right on the salad. And I love eating like that. In fact, it is so much better than eating that burger on the bun. It's satisfying, it's filling, and that's a very low-carb, nutritious way to eat at a fast food restaurant. Take the burger and all the fixings, okay, throw away the bun, pile the burger on a salad, eat all the dressing you want. Now, I will tell you that the dressings they're serving at the restaurant are horrible. They're using all poor quality oil. They're probably high in sugar. They might even have gluten and MSG in them. So that's where you might want to prepare your own dressings at home, carry them with you, and, you know, use those when you're in a restaurant. But other than the dressing, eating like that, a burger on a salad, I can do that at a fast food restaurant, and I can do it at the, you know, five-star steakhouse. It's virtually easy to eat that way everywhere.
Okay. That's great. I've been going just the opposite, the wrong way. Okay. Preparing my food from, I mean, you know, before I leave out, and I don't want to take up the whole time here, Kevin, but I appreciate it so much. What are some items for me to do now? You know, when I ask this question, I know nothing about what I'm asking, you know, for you to kind of give me an ideal, or is there a book that would be good for me as a truck driver to get to read?
You know, I wouldn't even buy a book to get started. You don't need to spend a penny. All you have to do is go online and Google ketogenic foods, or go to dietdoctor.com, one of our favorite sites. They have they have literally hundreds or thousands of recipe and menu ideas that are high fat, moderate protein, low carb. And the thing I like about Diet Doctor, they're simple. They don't do any kind of crazy complicated. They are pretty basic foods, but the recipes have all been modified to be high fat, low carb. So rather than buy a book, go spend some time on Diet Doctor and look through their recipes, and you will find hundreds of ideas.
Okay. All right. Last question, sir. I've got a lean protein shake from GNC. It says all natural with stevia instead of sugar.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. I'm not a big fan of protein shakes. I think we get more than enough protein in our diet. You know, all dairy has protein. Eggs have protein. Meat has protein. Many of the foods we eat on a ketogenic diet are already very high in protein. So I'm just not a big fan of these powdered mixes. You know, I really prefer to get as much nutrition from my food as possible, and I find that I have no problem getting plenty of protein. So I'm just not going to supplement with protein.
Okay, so in the morning, what I did was I was eating, you know, liquid eggs out of the carton, turkey bacon with cheese for breakfast, and I switched that to a lean protein shake. I would actually be better off to go back to what I was doing instead of the shake, correct?
Yes. Yeah, you would. I'd rather see you eat the real food. And you don't have to do the turkey bacon. Pork bacon is just fine. The fat is excellent, so I wouldn't worry about that. Do you drink coffee?
No, I've never acquired a taste for it at all.
Then don't start, because if you're not drinking it, there's no reason to. So I would go back to the way you were eating, you know, pretty typical breakfast stuff, bacon, eggs, sausage, eggs. And also remember for breakfast, Kim, you and I talk about this a lot. You don't get hung up on breakfast foods.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you want to eat whatever you had for dinner, which might have been, you know, who knows, it could have been sauteed leeks and cabbage in, you know, tons of butter with the 4 ounce, you know, grass fed steak. You know, if you want to eat that for breakfast, eat that for breakfast. Mm-hmm. You know, I make a ton of soup. Especially this time of year, I love soup. And the cool thing about soup, it's so easy to make it nutrient dense. Every vegetable in my house gets thrown in when I make soup. And every vegetable has a different nutritional profile. So the more you dump in, the more nutritionally diverse it becomes. And it's easy to do that with soup. And soup would make an excellent breakfast.
Yeah, I have a son. My 12-year-old is not a big breakfast eater. And same with myself, now that I've had to stay away from eggs, my purpose for my evening meal is to make more just so we have that for breakfast in the morning. And that's what we do. And it's been working. Works great.
And isn't it nice because it's so easy? Just reheat something and have a meal. I know. I love that.
Very, very much so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that. All right. Let's, you know what? I think we are all out of time. Lisa told me, never mind. Do you have any final words, Kim?
No, I just, you know, just I'm always grateful. I appreciate everybody letting us into their lives and just trust that we're committed to you. And we keep learning and you know, learning to bring stuff to you, but also learning how to be the best support for you. So please let us know how we can do that.
Very good. All right. Thanks for joining us. And we will see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you this weekend for the live show.